Almost half of the cases decided by the state Supreme Court so far this term have split 4-3. It's according to new data from Marquette University. The research says justices are ruling 4-3 more often this term than at any point in more than 7 decades. Alan Ball analyzed that data for ScowStats.com. That's a blog that crunches numbers about cases and decisions from the Wisconsin Supreme Court. He's a professor of history at Marquette University. Alan, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
How does this 4-3 decision split compare with years past?
Well, it's much higher, as you said. In fact, as a result of the most recent decision that was filed, it's now exactly half of all the decisions this term. There were 30 decisions filed this term, and 15 of them have been 4-3, which is much higher than any of the previous years. The next highest year was the previous year, 2021, for 37%, and that was a result of some of the factors I imagine that we'll be talking about today. The other surprising thing was that it was a court that's usually regarded as a conservative court, that the liberal justices have been in the majority of these 4-3 decisions much more often than the justices who are regarded as the most conservative justices, Rogan, Sack, and Ziegler, and Rebecca Bradley. Two very big surprises.
Before we dig into the swing vote on these, what is it about these narrow decisions? Why are they so common this last couple of years?
Well, I'd say that it's because you have two groups of three justices each, the three liberals, Ann Walsh Bradley, Dalit, and Kurowski on the one hand, and Rogan, Sack, Ziegler, and Rebecca Bradley on the other, that almost always vote together in these decisions. So you've got automatically or almost automatically three on one side and three on the other side, and meaning that there, it's going to be a 4-3 decision, and the crucial player as a result is Justice Hagedorn, who has been in the majority almost always in these 13 out of 15 of the 4-3 decisions. He's been in the majority, and so, in effect, you're not going to win unless you get Hagedorn's vote. And as I said, one of the most surprising things is that he has sided more often with the liberals this time, this term, so far anyway, than he has with the conservatives.
And surprising because he was a candidate. We have, these are nonpartisan offices. You don't run with an R or D, but all the candidates are backed by Republicans or Democrats. He had support from Republicans in his campaign.
Yes, well, he was Governor Walker's legal counsel, so I would never have predicted this when he was running for the Supreme Court.
Now, something struck me looking at your charts on this. We've got this jump in 4-3 rulings. At the other end, there's a lot of unanimous rulings. There's just not a lot of ground between those. So what, are a bunch of the issues, I guess, gimmies? No matter where you're coming from on the court, you're going to join a unanimous decision on it?
Well, the percentage of unanimous decisions is currently right now is 40%, which isn't unusual. There have been recent years where it's been at least 40, if not higher. It's relatively high, but not unusual. The biggest change has been in that there are very, very few 6-1 and 5-2 decisions, far fewer than in any of the other years that I've looked at. And that reflects the fact that, as I mentioned, that you have three justices on the liberal side and three on the conservative side that almost always vote together. If it's a gimme, as you say, then they're all going to vote together. But it's much, much rarer that you only have one or two in the minority.
We've got a state Supreme Court election race next year, an open seat. One of the conservative justices stepping down is the current plan anyway. This narrow split, I imagine, is going to put a lot of focus on this election.
Oh, yes. This will be a tremendously consequential election, depending on what happens, of course. If, say, Justice Rogan-Zack is replaced with someone who's regarded as a liberal, then we would have on the court something that we've never had before in all of the decades that I've been serving, and that is that you would have four liberals. And that, of course, could result in very different decisions on provocative cases, say gerrymandering or other things, than we've had in the past. If Justice Rogan-Zack is replaced with someone who's a conservative, then we'd have pretty much what we have right now, where Justice Hagedorn would be the crucial vote. If Justice Rogan-Zack is replaced with a liberal, however, Justice Hagedorn's role would become much less significant because the liberals could win without him. They would have Ann Walsh Bradley, Dalit, Kurowski, and whoever the new liberal was. And so Justice Hagedorn would be in a similar position to what he was in back in 2019-20 when Justice Kelly was still on the court, and the conservatives could win without Hagedorn. And so he was much less often crucial and much less often in the 4-3 majorities. Back then, the conservatives didn't need him in 2019-20 with Kelly. And if Roggenzack is replaced with a liberal, then now the liberals wouldn't need him.
This is we've done the number crunching here. Can you remind people why it's important to watch these kind of trends in the state Supreme Court and what kind of things are at stake in the state?
Well, it's extremely important because so many very provocative issues come before the court. Say, for instance, in the recent year, measures pertaining to how COVID should be dealt with or should not be dealt with, and especially challenges to the election, that there have been a large number of original action petitions filed where some actor, some group is asking the court to take a case immediately and not let it go through the lower courts. Generally challenging the election, and the court can make crucial decisions that affect everybody's life, whether, say, we accept the election as valid. For instance, last year there were an unprecedentedly large number of original action petitions filed challenging the election, and the court generally rejected them. And here, too, in the 8 cases where we know how the justices voted. We only know if they file a dissent or a concurrence or something, then we know how they voted. In the 8 cases where we know how they voted, the conservative justices wanted to accept cases that challenged the election, much along the lines, say, that former Justice Gableman is trying to do now, and Hagedorn sided with the liberals in refusing to take those cases. If, say, Dan Kelly had not lost to Kurowski and had still been on the court, then we might have had 4 justices agreeing to take these challenges to the elections. And of course, the landscape politically could have been quite different. So yes, there's tremendous importance resting on the outcome of these Supreme Court elections.
Alan, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That's Alan Ball, professor of history at Marquette University, with us today to talk about his new data showing a record percentage of 4-3 rulings from Wisconsin's Supreme Court so far in the court's current term. He wrote about those numbers on his blog, Scow Stats. That's SCOWstats.com.